Today's the big day that we Reclamation have been anticipating and working towards, and our objectives are real simple. We want to safely shut down both dams and power plants, and we're going to reroute the current water that we're running through the turbine generators over the spillway, and we're going to start up at Glines Canyon Dam first this morning, and then we're going to come back down here to Elwha, and we're going to shut down generator one first, then two, and then three. And then we will carefully shut down our DC excitation system and then separate from the line.
So is it an involved process, shutting one of these things down?
Yeah, it's quite involved. The water running through the turbines is controlled by what's called wicket gates, and you have to slowly shut down those gates to reduce the power on the turbine. But at the same time, you have to start closing switches and opening other switches. Plus, you also have to start opening the spillway gates so that we maintain a balanced flow. What comes in goes out.
So, can you tell me what we're doing right now?
We're unloading the generator right now. We don't want to separate from the grid until we've kind of reduced and getting it down almost to zero load, and then we'll shut it off.
Okay, here we go. He flipped a switch and the plant is spinning down. Kevin Yancey just shut the lights off.
It was a mere 2 weeks after KPDZ went on the air for the first time on May 15, 2011, that the station covered its first big breaking news story on location, bringing listeners inside for the shutdown of the Glines Canyon and Elwha Dam power stations in preparation for the historic demolition of the dams and restoration of the Elwha River in a vindication of the tribes in their quarter-century battle to save the salmon and free the river. In the six-plus years since, KPTZ's top-notch public affairs programming, from our many live broadcasts from our town's many festivals to shows like Toss Salad, Our Town, Treasures and Pleasures, Everybody Can, Under the Rainbow, Book Lovers Cafe, In Conversation, and of course KPTZ Compass, has become a sort of central nervous system for Port Townsend, linking every corner of the community together and bestowing innumerable shared experiences. This is Pledge Week, so this week for KPTZ Compass, I've gone into the archive and pulled out a rich array of vintage and recent reportage. It's our earnest hope that as you listen and review this pastiche of the ways we've bent your ears on the ground, you will recognize the value of the community service we provide and give generously to help us realize our dream of securing this service to the community for the future. We're doing our part, and we're relying on you to do yours. Become a member right now by calling 360-554-4430. That number once again is area code 360-554-4430. Or, better yet, come on down to the station here at Mountain View Commons to make your donation in person so we can get to know you. So now, let's take a trip down memory lane.
I'm Steve Evans from KPTZ Radio, our new community radio station here in town. And who are you?
I'm Princess Carly.
I'm Princess Abigail.
I'm Queen Emma.
I'm Queen's Court Morgan Chafee.
Queen's Court Sam Smith.
I'm Queen's Court Deidre Morris.
Queen's Court Abby Clemens.
What is the significance of the Rhododendron Festival to you? Maybe I'll address that question to the Queen.
I think that the significance of the Rhododendron Festival is tradition. It's really when all the families and all the community members come out together to celebrate one thing that happens every single year. So tradition.
So what's your favorite part about the Rhodie Festival?
Seeing all the people that live in town, seeing smiles on their faces, seeing them doing goofy things like wearing crowns and dressing up dogs and cats.
His little face is like, get me off of here.
Keegan here, or Kane hears people scream, so he puts his hands up and tries to scream too.
There's not really any scary rides here except for that one's okay, the starship one. This one's just fun, it's not scary.
Whoa.
Are you sure you don't want to go on it?
It's fun.
It's really fun.
It's fun.
See, look, everybody's saying it's not scary. You want to try it?
Huh?
All right.
What are you trying to do here?
Whack a mole.
You try to whack a mole?
Yeah, and the first one who gets to 100 wins.
She's almost 14 years old.
14.
And she's quite deaf. And this one's 3 years old.
Are they related?
No, as far as I know.
Now, I see you're wearing a ribbon there. Does that mean that you won a prize here today?
Oh, it just means I entered in the judging, but I didn't really want a prize. You know, I just want to see the dogs.
The Marine vessel Salish has arrived in Port Townsend. Identical to her twin sister, the Chetsimoka, right down to the noticeable list to one side, the spanking new ferry arrived at the PT Ferry Terminal on Sunday, where she will undergo final sea trials and crew training for the next couple of weeks before going into full service. A dedication of the new boat will be held on the 29th of this month.
That's as tight as you want it. So put your knee over here. There you go, up close to his ears, right on. Good, perfecto. Then you go ahead and loop that around. Did you see how I did it? Oh, it's already looped.
It's already looped.
Good boy. The others
should probably be calm. I mentioned some things about his fiber now. It's about 4 inches in length, which is ideal. He's got really nice brightness and fineness. He's grade 3, which is about 26 microns, 25. So he's still nice. It's right in the ballpark.
Oh, it has seat belts.
Oh, yeah.
That's not original equipment, is it?
Oh, no. Who needed a seat belt in 1953? We didn't have car wrecks then, right? Okay, so this is cold. Let's be sitting out on that one. Crank it up here. Get your seatbelts on.
So now, apart from the seatbelts, is this all original equipment here?
No. This car has a larger motor than it would originally have. Originally, the motor in this one was either an 830cc motor, which would have been a flathead motor, or it had the early 948 motor. This is kind of one of those cars on the cusp, right, when they were changing, so 60s.
I see. Yeah.
Typical sounding, though. I know you want to drive it.
So this is kind of your personal driver on Morris?
It's kind of my personal daily driver. I'm a little hard on it. I don't treat it like a real sweet one. It's not a show car in any way. It's the patina of an old car that still runs.
Yeah, I see a little bit of oxidation here on the dash.
Yeah. Convertibles get lots of oxidation.
Yeah. Excuse me, what's happening here?
It's the Bird Festival, the Edison Bird Festival. They start it with a chicken race. People in costumes rollerblading, the first race. And the second one is a parade of chickens.
And what's the history of this event?
It's 3 years old. I'm from Seattle. I just come up for it, so I honestly couldn't fill you in. I'm not a local. So.
You've got an interesting hat on here. Where did you get this hat?
I made it this morning on the way up here. Luckily, it's an hour and a half car ride.
Is this a parade or a race?
The initial event was a race, and now we're moving on to the parade.
And how did you qualify to enter this?
I showed up. That man right there, Scott, he owns the bread farm. He challenged me to a roller skating race, dressed as chickens. So you'll have to ask him about his motives for challenging me.
Okay.
And how he feels about it now.
Never do it again.
So why did you challenge her?
Well, because she was out here on roller skates last year, and I had gotten myself a pair at the Goodwill, and I'd gotten myself a chicken suit for Halloween, and I felt like the nexus of all of this was a roller skating race through the middle of Edison in chicken garb.
I see. And can you tell me the history of the chicken race?
This is the first year of the chicken race, so there is no history.
No.
The history now is that Lisa's the champion, and I came in last. And so we know where we stand. And hopefully we'll move on from here and I'll get better. I'll practice because I'm going to come back next year and I'm going to take it from the line, first place, all the way.
We're going to do utilities, we're going to do PUD, and then we'll do public works. But Don.
Okay, our current major activities and highest priorities are basically the same, getting the backbone transmission systems up and running and get those repaired, and then some secondary clearing and assessment of the distribution system. The next highest met priority and some would be the inflow of contractors and materials and portable substations to serve the area here.
In case you just tuned in, this is coverage of last week's Cascadia Rising drill. There has not been an actual emergency. Here was Incident Commander Bob Hamlin's report.
We have more problems than we have solutions. That's not going to fix itself today, but we need to let go of some of the lighter stuff. The standard of care has changed. That means we don't use resources where it's not economical. Don't use resources on single problems when you have multiple problems. So the standard way of triaging just doesn't work. My highest priority for the next operational period is to get more vertical communications. I'm not communicating very well with anybody at above this location just because of comms problems. I'm going to fix those. And that's my primary unmet need is ability to get some policy guidance. The declaration of emergency is going to happen probably both in the county and the city. It's not absolutely essential, but it'll be something I want to happen really soon.
Some people are going in again and swimming to the shore. The dock is now under about 6 inches of water here as people are... It's a traffic jam as people are trying to get out, as other people are trying to get in.
Oh my God!
Sierra!
Went all the way to the end.
Let's wait till some people get out.
By the time I made it back to the ramp from the third float out, my shoes and jeans were soaked to mid-shin. And so it was that I could report, based on empirical evidence, that the water was indeed very, very cold. When I finally got back to the top of the ramp and solid ground, I found Sue Rose, who with her husband Tom inaugurated the Nordland Polar Plunge some 21 years ago, standing clipboard in hand, attempting with only moderate success to get all of the swimmers to sign in.
About that, actually.
Do you happen to know what the water temperature is this morning?
It's about 42.
About 42?
Yeah,
But it actually was frozen on the surface.
Yesterday it was completely frozen. It had little icebergs everywhere, hundreds of them.
It was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, little icebergs.
Now, do you happen to know like what the record number of people
We had 187 on the Millennium. That would have been like our fifth year, I guess.
They sunk the dock.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody got out in the dock, and the dock was actually awash.
Well, actually, they sunk the dock just now, too. I was out there. Yes, you see this? They sunk it up to here.
So you should have your swimsuit on, huh?
That's like 10 inches at least.
Yeah, you might as well have.
I was in. That's what I felt. You know, but I had the recorder
in my
hand.
Did you want to sign the waiver?
See, there's an old relic.
Part of what traps you is that you feel sorry for the person and you understand them so well and you have all these reasons why he does what he does. And you love him and you feel compassionate towards him, but you, in the process, you forget the compassion towards yourself. And you let someone do things that you shouldn't let them do, and it's not good for them either.
But, you know, you feel so powerless in those moments, and he's, like, I would rather him take it out on me, because then I could be like, then I could call the cops. Sorry.
Thank you. It was a hot potato, this one.
It's very emotional material for a lot of people.
Perhaps the reason the atmosphere was so emotional, as Poetic Justice Theater Ensemble director Mark Weinblatt said, was that the audience for the evening of what Weinblatt calls interactive forum theater at the Port Townsend Community Center was self-selected and therefore predisposed to engage in a personal way with the emotional subject matter of domestic violence and abusive relationships. It became clear in the course of the evening that many members of both the audience and the cast had personal experience with both. If you just tuned in and you're wondering what the heck you're listening to, it's Pledge Week, so this week on KPTZ Compass, we're presenting a sampling of the wide assortment of stories we have covered since the station's inception on May 15th, 2011. It's our earnest hope that as you listen and review this pastiche of the stories we have covered, you will recognize the value of the community service our news department provides and give generously to help us realize our dream of securing this service to the community for the future. Become a member now by calling area code 360-554-4430. That number again is area code
360-554-4430.
That's so good.
How about the spotted dog?
Oh, yeah.
But I really need it. I need to stop and take my shirt off.
This is Steve Evans with a special report in Roche Harbor, Washington. A funny thing happened a few months ago when the renowned traditional Irish fiddler Randall Bays tried to cancel the Friday Harbor Irish Music Camp he had founded almost a decade before, because the company that had handled getting the visas for the traditional Irish musicians who served as faculty had gone out of business. The student campers rebelled and decided to hold the camp on their own. No one really blamed Bays for not wanting to take on the whole ever-tightening apparatus of homeland security on his own when a company that had specialized in the field had found it too much. But many of the student players quickly realized that although when the music camp first started, the opportunity to study under the best Irish players was what attracted them, now there was a whole new magnet. Namely, the community that these musicians from places near and far, California and Alaska, Seattle and Michigan, had developed over the years. That and a cherished annual holiday in an idyllic San Juan Island setting. And so, what might be called the Rebel Irish Music Camp was born. Using an internet bulletin board and social networking sites, the would-be conferees and friends decided to come anyway for a do-it-yourself Irish music camp.
And we have to make this world a livable place, and I think keeping spaces green and the more trees the better, and the more oxygen the better, and the more, you know, natural filters of water and rain and aquifers are better than cracking open the earth and cutting down trees.
What are we going to have to work in and take care of? You know, this land is what feeds people, and you know, we're in a real sick economy anyhow. Why do we want to make it any sicker by locking up some more of our land into this wild wilderness and scenic deal? It's not going to do any of us any good. It's just more government control.
After nearly 5 years of delays, in part caused by a legal dispute over the environmental ramifications, Port Townsend Paper Corporation last week called it quits on its controversial plan to build a 25-megawatt biomass-fired power plant at its pulp mill site on the edge of town. But in the end, it wasn't the lawsuit from environmental organizations calling for a more thorough environmental review or the heated opposition of townspeople worried about the health effects of the increased air pollution that put a stop to the proposed project. In the end, it was simple economics that led to the decision to pull the plug.
Thank you.
before the Ace of Cups, I'd never seen a concertina. The place was crawling with them. Had you ever seen a concertina before you came to Port Townsend?
Oh, yeah. I was greeting the folks on the cruise ship and told them about a lot of the people who moved here in the 70s, and they said, well, we're on the walking tour. Will we see any of those old hippies? And I looked at this group of retired people. I said, I think I'm looking at some of them right now.
Under the auspices of the Jefferson County Historical Society's First Friday Lecture Series, a group of more than 100 of Port Townsend's most colorful and illustrious characters assembled in the Pope Marine Building one recent evening to reminisce about the Ace of Cups, the legendary uptown cafe that in the late 1970s and early 80s served as a community commons, a kind of fermenting cauldron of ideas, music, poetry, and storytelling, the ripples from which can still be felt in town today.
My question is, why is the National Park and Forest Service even considering this? Why does the Navy think that they can increase the noise? It's ridiculous. It's like they're trying to... they're sticking their foot in, and it's just going to get worse. It's been getting worse for 15 years.
Thank you. As I've said, we've received a request from the Navy. We are considering it.
Why are you considering it? That was the question, sir.
Because, as I said earlier, we have a... This is appropriate use of National Forest System lands. Memorandum of understanding between the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Defense, and it is probably used under the National Forest laws that govern our National Forest System.
Forest Service do not involve any other agency. It says so quite clearly on your
Please let us have more time for the questions.
Breaking the law.
Let her speak. Thank you.
The next questioner is Cheryl Morgenstern.
Representatives of the U.S. Navy and the U.S. Forest Service faced a very tough crowd at a public meeting held in the Port Angeles City Council Chambers on the evening of Thursday, November 5th. People had come in droves from as far away as Oak Harbor, Port Townsend, and Squim, and there were rumors that a large contingent from Forks had not shown up only because there were trees down blocking the highway over by Lake Crescent that stormy night. It's probably just as well they couldn't make it, though, because as it was, every seat in the large hall was filled. People were sitting on the floor and standing wherever they could find room at the back, and the crowd extended out into the foyer all the way to the front doors. There was no more room. Many of them had purposely arrived as much as 2 hours early, so they could hold a rally to protest plans by the Navy to turn a vast swath of the Western Olympic Peninsula into an electronic warfare training range. The subject of the meeting was a Navy application for a Forest Service permit to use remote logging roads for mobile electromagnetic emitter trucks that Growler aircraft from Naval Air Station Whidbey Island would seek out in cat-and-mouse war games for up to 18 hours a day on as many as 260 days a year.
Of our former chief, Jetson Mahan, who signed our treaty, Point No Point Treaty. We know you had a good pull this morning coming from Fort Gamble, and you got a long journey as you journey on to Quinault Village. And we know that you're tired and you need to be rested, you need food. We are very pleased to welcome you to our land and to our beach. Come ashore, enjoy stories and good times with all of our families, canoe families here as you continue on your journey. Rest with us. We have good food with you.
Prominent cancer researchers, using a theoretical framework that was the dominant paradigm for explaining the disease prior to the discovery of DNA in the first half of the 20th century, have achieved results ranging from impressive to spectacular, using no-cost to very low-cost techniques that show promise to revolutionize the treatment of the stubborn, often fatal illness, according to a recently published book. In a telephone interview, I spoke with biochemist Travis Christofferson, author of Tripping Over the Truth, The Metabolic Theory of Cancer, which summarizes the exciting findings. Why don't you start off with telling me, just what is the metabolic theory of cancer, and how does it differ from the somatic mutational theory of cancer, which is the one that the great majority of researchers have been working on for decades?
Sure. So, well, the primary difference is the metabolic theory obviously believes cancer is driven by defects in metabolism, whereas the somatic mutation theory contends that cancer is driven by mutations to DNA. And so the best way to talk about it is sort of take the 30,000-foot view and explain it historically. And it was first proposed by this brilliant German scientist named Otto Warburg, who won the Nobel Prize. He was nominated for three others. In 1924, he turned his entire focus to cancer. And he made this striking observation about the cancer cell that it overproduced lactic acid in the presence of oxygen. And this is something that typically normal, healthy cells will never do. And so the question is, why are cancer cells doing this? If you've ever taken a biology class, you'll remember that your cell can produce energy in two ways. It can produce energy aerobically, and that's with oxygen, or anaerobically, and that's without oxygen. And so if you lift weights or if you sprint, you'll start getting this burning sensation in your muscles, and that's when your body is producing energy anaerobically and producing lactic acid. So for some reason, cancer cells have reverted to this ancient method of energy creation, and Warburg wondered why. And so later on in his career, he contended that the reason is because the cellular organelle called mitochondria, the site where all the aerobic energy metabolism takes place, are broken and not there. So this injury to the cell's mitochondria precipitates cancer, and he said this was the prime cause of cancer.
If you just want to stand like right behind me, I'll open this, and they're going to come out, and sometimes they come out on top of me here. They climb up my shirt.
So now, how many Swifts are in here?
So there's 8 boxes Swifts in here.
Swifts.
Yeah. Which are, you know, what people would know as chimney Swifts. And this particular group of birds came out of a nest that fell from a chimney and broke into a bunch of pieces. And they came to me about 6 weeks ago when they were still, their eyes weren't even open. And so I've been taking care of them ever since, so you could see that.
Yep.
They really enjoy it. Now you know why I go through so many mealworms, you can see.
I can tell.
They're all gobbling. Well, they all want to be fed, so they're...
So for our listeners...
And I do this every hour.
Several of the Swifts are clinging to her... shirt.
There are, and they're all, you know, just trying to get ahead of the other guy to get fed. Now they also are practicing their flying, and that's a good thing because I'm trying to get these guys ready to go.
Well, it looks like this one is ready to go.
Yeah,
now.
They're all flying really well, right. And it's time for them to go. I'm going to introduce them into a colony in PA, but there's a church up in PA that have quite a few of these guys. And so the idea is I'm going to take them up there and I'm going to let them go, probably in the evening at dusk, just as they're returning from their day's flight, you know. These guys will join them and go in and roost that night and hopefully pretty, you know, in no time at all become part of that colony, which will, in September, get ready to migrate south.
This week's special Pledge Drive edition of KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. If you want to hear more of the kind of public affairs programming brought to you by the Compass, please call area code 360-554-4430 right now to let us know you appreciate it and to become a member of the KPTZ family. Or, better yet, come on by and deliver your donation personally. There may even be a cookie in it for you. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.